You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome, one and all, to tonight's live broadcast of TPC. It is our post-election recap show, or perhaps it's our post-election fallout show. Either way, I'm James Edwards, along with Keith Alexander. We have an all-star panel, a quartet of all-stars, coming your way tonight as we're going to examine the how and the why of what happened last Tuesday night in the midterms. We're going to have Lauren Witzke, a former nominee for United States Senate in her own right, a Republican out of Delaware. She'll be back, as will program mainstays Greg Johnson, editor-in-chief of Countercurrents, and Dr. Kevin McDonald, professor emeritus of psychology at California State University, Long Beach. They will all be coming up next hour, hour number two. Hour number three, making his debut appearance on the program, the one and only Ethan Ralph of the Killstream. You don't want to miss his takes. You're going to learn more about him, and he's going to continue what will be a three-hour, he actually is going to close it out, a three-hour analysis as we offer opinion and commentary on last Tuesday's election night results. So, that being said, and the table now having been set, let's dive right in. I know everybody is saying that the Republicans, well, what a terrible night for the Republicans. And I guess if you based it upon expectations, there was undoubtedly an underperformance there. If you look at the historical trends, the party that holds the White House normally does poorly in a midterm election. If you look at the historic levels of inflation, a crime wave that is historic, the fact that the Democrats, not only have they presided over that inflation, $5 a gallon gas and rampant invasion on our southern border, they have nearly got us to the brink of nuclear war with Russia. You add all of that on top of the historical trends that suggest that the party in the White House should lose, and yes, it was a bad night for the Republicans, but it's hard to say that the Democrats won. They didn't increase their standings. They're almost certainly going to lose the House of Representatives, so that's a big win for the Republicans, and it does look, though, that they will maintain their slim edge in the Senate. So you're going to have a split Congress. That's okay. And you've increased polarization, which we'll be talking about a lot tonight. I think that's definitely a good thing. And when you look at, for instance, the situation in Arizona, which we'll be talking about a lot more as well, look, you've got the entire constellation of the establishment-controlled press in the tank for the system candidates in the Democratic Party. The entire array of the media outside of alternative media and maybe to an extent Fox News. In Arizona alone, Mark Kelly raised $80 million to Blake Masters, $12 million. So that's the kind of odds you were going up against. But at the end of the day, what we saw was a pitched battle, Keith Alexander, trench warfare. The red states got redder. Florida went from red to outright maroon. And the blue states and the blue areas and the blue precincts seemed to get bluer.
Went from baby blue to navy blue.
Blue, navy blue, I'm as blue as I can be.
Well, that ought to be our song for the night.
So, again, that's my opening shot, is that this increased polarization is a good thing, even though the GOP did underperform based upon that conventional wisdom. But we do have a full three-hour show coming your way. We're going to look at it from every angle I think you'll want to have us explore. But I think at the end of the day, Keith, the election proves that no matter what, no matter how bad things are, we live in a 50-50 country. The country is split 50-50. Neither side is going to be pleased or persuaded by the other. We need a national divorce. We need balkanization. And when Greg Johnson comes on in the second hour, I think he's really going to be interesting, because he says it is in the best interest of whites and of nationalists that the Republicans didn't get a red wave, and he's going to tell you why in the second hour. Got a lot coming. What's your take?
Well, let me just take that last point first, okay? Can you hear me now?
You're good.
Okay, here's the situation. It's all right to lose and keep people radicalized if you don't have two things happen. One is we don't want to engender impotent rage on the part of our people. That's where Dylan Roof's come from. That's where problems are spawned, okay? That's one thing to worry about. The other thing that we need to worry about is, will the left gain so much power and be so emboldened that they make permanent changes that are going to affect us regardless of whether we ever regain power? We could have George Wallace, Theodore Bilbo, and Huey Long, both, all three, rise from the grave to lead us. And if the left has packed the Supreme Court, if they have turned Puerto Rico and D.C. into states and gotten 11, I mean four more senators, if they pass a nationwide election law that prevents us from doing anything effectively about electoral fraud. And let me say, just for the record, I think that electoral fraud was the reason why we couldn't make any inroads in blue states or purple states in this last election. Because when that happens, you know, the best choice we had from our standpoint was that the left would lose and they would start suffering that sputtering phenomenon of impotent rage, and they would decide they wanted to secede from us, which would be ideal, because I really don't think secession will work without a bloodbath of our people unless it's the left and the blue that decides that secession is in their best interest. And if they do, we'll tell them, don't let the door hit you in the ass when you leave. But on the other hand, as long as they think they can control us and have the exquisite pleasure of bending us to their will, that's what started the Civil War with the Yankee abolitionists. That's what's happened in the second Reconstruction with the Civil Rights Movement and the first Reconstruction from 1865 to 1877. They just could not give up the exquisite pleasure of bending us to their will. On the other hand, us bending them to their will, I mean, if you want to see the left decide that secession wasn't such a bad thing after all, that's the way to do it. I don't think we're going to get the secession that I think Greg Johnson would like us to have. Unless
not just Greg Johnson, but just probably everybody who's appeared on this program.
Well, yeah, you and me included. But the problem is, as long as they think they can capture us and torment us and keep us in the ideological gulag, well, I don't think that's going to happen.
Now, it did make a difference. It does make a difference that the Republicans took the House. So Brad Griffin was on last week for the election preview show, along with Jose Nino and, of course, John Friend of the American Free Press. By the way, I sat down with John Friend with American Free Press for an interview. He was on with us last week, and I did an interview with American Free Press this week talking about the election. So, look, you can understand why people thought that the Republicans would have done a little bit better. We went over the reasons why, but I can also understand why that they didn't. And the reason is because all of these things, Democrats are impervious to a lot of the things that you look. We don't have one country anymore. You have two countries. So one country voted for their interest and our country voted for our interest. So that's why you have that divide. You can't inflation. Democrats are sort of inflation resistant because you have an elite managerial class in the Democratic Party. Then you have a lot of government employees, and then you have people who leech off of the system. So they're recession proof. That they're not hurt by that. They don't bother to be upset about crime either. They're the ones committing it. That's why that a lot of these issues didn't really come back and hurt them. We'll talk so much more about it next. Stay tuned.
Antelope Hill Publishing is America's leading publisher of dissident books, bringing you a wide variety of new translations and original works on every subject from the Spanish Civil War to the funding behind the transgender movement. Antelope Hill publishes books that mainstream publishers won't touch, full of information that challenges the political status quo and brings real culture to the reading public at an affordable price. If you count yourself as a political dissident, you owe it to yourself to check out the Antelope Hill catalog with exclusive offerings like Solzhenitsyn and the Right, The Open Society Playbook, Opioids for the Masses, and many more. There's something there for everyone, and new titles are added every month. Check out the catalog today at AntelopeHillPublishing.com. That's AntelopeHillPublishing.com. I'm James Edwards, and I want you to go to antelopehillpublishing.com.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast, and that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
All right, so we mentioned Brad Griffin, who was on the show last week. Always fun talking to Brad, and Brad has a little post. He's not going to be on tonight, but he has a little post-action recap of his own, and here was his take. And his big takeaway was from the 2022 midterms is that nothing much changed. We're not in a fundamentally different America now than we were a week ago. Democrats did exceed expectations. They fought to a draw, but there wasn't a red wave or a blue wave so much as just a standstill. The big picture is that the status quo prevailed pretty much everywhere except in Florida, and the Senate is still technically a jump ball. It looks like that is going to go by one or two seats to the Democrats. You're still going to have Manchin and Sinema in there who will hopefully do their duty. With regard to the filibuster, but the House, the Republicans winning the House are going to stop a lot of that stuff from being sent up to the Senate anyway, and that's probably going to go narrowly Republican. That depends, of course, on how many mail-in votes are still being manufactured out there. In the governor's races, though, incumbents did tend to win everywhere. As I said, red states got redder, blue states got bluer. Democrats did pick up seats in the governor's mansions in Maryland and Massachusetts, but you had left-wing Republicans who weren't running for re-election, so it just naturally went by default to the Democrats. Gretchen Whitmer of COVID lockdown infamy was reelected in Michigan, and Ron DeSantis absolutely blew the barn door off in Florida with an historic win. But it would have been a disaster if the Democrats held both the House and Senate and increased their majority in the Senate. So that's the main thing here. And it does make a difference because if they increased their margin in the Senate and held the House, which it doesn't look like they're going to do, they could have nuked the filibuster. And without the filibuster, all sorts of awful things could have been passed by a simple majority, like massive amnesty and other terrible things like that, just like the war with Russia, which they've already started. Now, in contrast, though, if the Republicans take the House narrowly, which it looks like they are going to do that, just by taking the House and not both houses of Congress, they're going to be able to put basically a lame duck status on Biden for the next 2 years. And you can have people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's going to have a lot more leverage. This is a great point by Brad here. Marjorie Taylor Greene and that America First caucus, Paul Gozer and people like that, by the Republicans winning the House narrowly as opposed to winning it by several more seats, Kevin McCarthy or whoever the Speaker of the House is going to be are going to have to barter with the implicitly pro-white faction of the GOP Congress in order to get things passed. So in a way, again, listen to me here, we are a little bit better off. I would have rather the Republicans taken the Senate. I didn't vote for the Republicans so much as I just wanted the Democrats to lose. I'm not saying the Republicans writ large deserve to win. The national, the Mitch McConnell Republicans didn't deserve to win. I did want the Democrats to lose, however. But I think by winning the House narrowly, it gives Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's going to be a big force in this new GOP Congress, it's going to give them a little more leverage.
Well, I think you're ignoring the 800-pound gorilla sitting on the living room couch, and that's electoral fraud. I think that electoral fraud was alive and well in this election, and basically what it transfers down to is if you are in a blue state or a purple state, don't expect to have any changing of the guard from the political establishment. They will elect a vegetable like John Fetterman in Pennsylvania.
That's no joke.
Yeah, that guy's a human vegetable. But see,
he's seriously brain damaged. I mean, that's not just he's not very smart. Fact, I mean, he had a stroke. He is brain damaged, and they elected him.
That's going to be, in fact.
But yeah, I got to tell you, Keith, I would too. I would elect a retarded Republican, you know, a right winger, whatever you want to call our. To stop a left wing anti white Democrat from getting in, I would vote for a vegetable. I get it. That's what the trench warfare is.
Look, Republicans have been electing vegetables for a long time.
Okay. Bob Dole,
and people like that, and John McCain, Liz Cheney, yada yada yada. But see, our problem is that the left wasn't discouraged by the result. In fact, they were heartened by it. They were really desperate.
But they are truly worse off than they were last week. The Republicans are not.
They don't see it that way. Other people's perceptions are the ultimate reality. Joe Biden is up here crowing.
Well, they got to say that.
He's doing that because that's what he really thinks. He's saying.
Well, he's doing that because that's what's on his teleprompter. I mean, look, this guy doesn't know what planet he's on.
It's cock-a-doodle-doo. He's up here, you know, crowing like a rooster in the morning.
Because they lost the House? I mean, because that's really the only thing that fundamentally changed.
No, what he said that is key, James, is that now I'm not going to change one iota of my platform. In other words, I'm going all green all the time. I don't care if I freeze you people out. I don't care if I bankrupt you. I don't care who loses their jobs in the energy sector. I don't care if all of Europe freezes, the NATO people. You know, go green, go.
He would have done the same thing, though, if the Republicans had taken the Senate by 5 seats and increased their majority in the House to 20. I mean, that's all there is.
Well, I know, but see, the thing is,
that's propaganda, and both parties do that.
Well, it's more than propaganda, in my opinion, James. I think that if there was some real angst being suffered by the left, they might consider a national divorce. That's what we are angling
for. Well, I tell you who's going to help them continue to make mistakes, and this is another topic, and I don't want to get into it quite yet. If Trump announces that he's running again, now that's the guy.
Well there are several things
that can make them make mistakes because he's done it before.
This is a lot like America right before the Civil War. Basically, the South got tired of electing cucks as Democrats that really would not change the landscape politically. So they decided to run some true believers, John Bell of Tennessee and John Breckinridge. And they split their vote three ways between Stephen Douglas, Breckinridge, and Bell.
I'll tell you what about John Breckinridge. Anybody that can take an unproven group of cadets with no shoes and win a battle, that's a guy we can win with.
Well, yeah, he would have been the best choice. But as Johnny Majors, the famed football coach of Tennessee, once said, if aughts and buts were candy and coconuts every day, it would be Christmas. Okay, but then what's happened, though, the South decided to split their votes. Lincoln, who only got 39% of the votes, wound up being the president, and he was a true radical, and he provoked the South into making an attack on one of their fortifications, the one at Fort Sumter, and that was just like Churchill getting Hitler to invade Poland. That was it wasn't a false flag, but it was a real flag, but it was a schemed up, dreamed up stratagem, and it worked. Now, the left in America would like nothing more than the South to decide that we're going to rise again and secede, and then they could get Mark Milley and all these other people that Trump appointed, in there running the military to go after us. We need them to decide it's time to have a national.
Well, look, the bottom line is the political stress level has not been diffused by this. If anything, I think that this whole thing being so close. By the way, the Republicans, at least as last count, I mean, again, they're still manufacturing the mail-in ballots, and so we'll see how many more of them they'll count before this thing's all said and done. But as of the last count, the Republicans won the popular vote nationwide. Now that's pretty
well, yeah,
interesting.
That and 25 cents won't buy a cup of coffee anymore.
Well,
okay?
But it is interesting.
And yeah, so, but look at this, though, James. Look at this.
I want to get the fraud though before we run out of time.
Okay, Arizona, Nevada,
All right, okay. There you go.
Okay, look at Arizona.
Well, I got to say this. Tucker Carlson said this on his own program two nights ago, that the day after the election, the Clark County, now that's the Democratic stronghold, that's Las Vegas.
That's Nevada.
In Nevada. The day after the election, they found, after the election, 50,000 more ballots in this Democratic stronghold. And then they came in.
And when all is said and done, more will be said than done. And then we have obvious evidence of voter fraud there, but I've looked at the guy. Looks like he's some guy that played a mafioso member back in a Jimmy Cagney movie back in the 30s or 40s. Well, nothing's going to be done about that. In Arizona, where we had so much hope, Kathy Hobbs, or whatever her name is, that's running against Carrie Lake for governor, guess what her position is? Secretary of State. Who controls elections in a
state?
The Secretary of State.
Got to say
so
this about
you these really
two
think,
states.
Look, you think Blake Masters is going to come out on top? Keep dreaming. You think Carrie Lake is going to come out on top? Keep dreaming.
Well, that was the thing with Adam Laxalt, who was...
And Adam Laxalt in Nevada, you
well,
think...
Well, that's the thing.
All three of these people really won their elections.
Well, we don't know that.
This is the legitimate take.
This is the legitimate take on that. And my take on that has been consistent going back to the whole thing with Trump in 2020. My take is, I don't know for sure, but I sure wouldn't discount it. And here's my thinking, and anybody with the head on their shoulders that works right would think this. We live in an absolutely criminally corrupt country. Our country is governed by career criminals, a cabal, people who there is no perversion they won't accept. There is no anti-white narrative or action that they won't push. And these are people that go into these unconstitutional, illegal wars and murder millions of people. But, oh, no, they wouldn't possibly cheat in an election. I mean, you'd have to be stupid to believe that. I don't know for sure, but I would bet that they did.
Look, when you have more people vote than you have registered voters, if that doesn't tell you we've had a cheat.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News.
I'm Tony Marusso reporting. Democratic Senator Mark Kelly won his bid for re-election Friday in the crucial swing state of Arizona, defeating Republican venture capitalist Blake Masters to put his party one victory away from clinching control of the chamber for the next 2 years of Joe Biden's presidency. With Vice President Kamala Harris's tie-breaking vote, Democrats can retain control of the Senate by winning either the Nevada race, which remains too early to call, or next month's runoff in Georgia. Republicans now must win both races to take the majority. Tuesday, we saw a huge victory for Ron DeSantis.
Incumbent GOP Governor Ron DeSantis won re-election in Florida and even flipped Miami-Dade County for the first time in 20 years in the governor's race. Appearing on Fox News, Florida Congressman Greg Stube shares why he thinks his state saw a record turnout for this election.
Florida is no longer a purple state. We are solidly a red state, doing better statewide than even Texas. And it's because of the policies that Republicans have had in place here in Florida, and people all across the country, especially during COVID, recognize that, and they're sick and tired of democratically run cities and states, so they move here to Florida where they have freedom.
Governor DeSantis also won a majority of the state's Latino vote. Democrats have accused state Republicans of gerrymandering congressional districts and passing laws to suppress voters. In the USA Radio News Midwest Bureau, I'm Katie Lewis.
While traveling with President Biden aboard Air Force One Friday night, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre responds to Thursday's decision from a federal judge to block the Biden administration's student debt forgiveness policy. The Trump-appointed U.S. District Judge ruled that the Biden administration goes beyond the authority of the Education Department and the executive branch, Jean-Pierre promising that the administration is not through trying to implement this policy.
I strongly disagree with this baseless decision, and the Department of Justice is appealing it.
This is USA Radio News.
Paid for by GovMint.com.
The 1878 to 1921 Morgan Silver Dollar, a true American classic and one of the most iconic silver dollar coins in history. It's been 100 years since the last Morgan Silver Dollar coin was struck for circulation. And now, for a limited time only, full pound bags of original U.S. government struck Morgan dollars are being released to the public. That's right. You can own a full pound of 1878 to 1921 classic American Morgan Silver Dollar coins, all in very good collector condition with fully visible dates and mint marks. guaranteed. Call 1-800-473-1745 now to secure collector-grade U.S. Morgan Silver dollars by the pound, struck during the Wild West and the Gilded Age. Plus, receive a bonus American Collector's Pack valued at over $25 free with every order. Call 1-800-473-1745 now to secure your full pound bag of Morgan Silver dollar coins before they are gone. 1-800-473-1745. That's 1-800-473-1745.
Okay, back to the issue of potential fraud. If you had to bet your life on it, who knows? Okay, that we don't know for sure. We don't have the smoking gun.
Well, I know for sure.
All right, you know for sure, but nobody knows for sure. But the thing is, if in a criminally corrupt country, yes, it's entirely possible. Look at how many they break any law they want at any time, but they're not going to break the election laws. That's nonsense.
But
of course they might.
Let me just say this before we get off of that.
Gotta go quick.
Look. If you have more people voting than you have registered voters, that is a big red flag. The things any reasonable country or state would say, hold up, we're going to have an investigation. We're not certifying the results of this election. They won't do it. They didn't do it before in 2020. They're not going to do it now. It works for them. They have it. And I know how it's done the old-fashioned way through black precincts. Stop the vote, find out how many you need, then vote the votes of blacks that haven't voted. Or you do it the modern way if you don't have a big black population in any of your urban centers. You do it through algorithms. But nonetheless, one way or another, basically I think a lot of people who are white and are conservative in their instincts, they're giving up on the system. On the other hand, the left has been totally inspired by coming to the precipice and, you know, surviving the onslaught. That's what the problem is. We need the left to be despairing so that they will consider secession.
So here's the thing. 50,000 drop box votes came in a heavily Democratic area while the GOP candidate for Senate in Nevada was nursing a 20,000 vote lead. He's now behind. If the Republicans do not stop drop box and mail-in voting should be absolutely banned unless you have some sort of a doctor's note saying you cannot physically travel to a voting place or you're overseas or in the military or something like that.
We've said all of this many times before, though, James. The problem is this. Somebody's got to bring the suit. Somebody has got to find a court that will take it seriously. And somebody needs to reverse the election results somewhere. If we can't do that, then all we're doing is, you know, flapping our gums.
I got it. Well, you can go to the criminally corrupt courts, and you're not going to get any justice there either. That's why I'm saying, okay, they'll probably cheat. I agree they probably do. But I don't care if they do or don't in a way, because I want secession. I want balkanization.
I don't want secession if it's going to be a war, because they now control the army and the military. And it would be a bloodbath for our people.
We need
to somehow persuade them that it's in their best interest to succeed.
All right. And one way to do that is by Trump getting in on the action. And we'll talk about that in a second, too. In the very unlikely scenario that they would do that. They didn't do it before. Why would they do it now? But the thing in Las Vegas in Nevada was, obviously, with the early voting, that's a Democratic machine.
That's a Voting Rights Act invention. That, absentee ballots. Early voting
for a month. They early vote for a month, so when the initial results come in, the Democrats are always winning. And then the Republicans take over in these crucial swing states. And then 2 weeks later, the mail-in ballots are still being voted. Oh, my God. The Democrats actually got over the hump.
Every black preacher in Georgia, in Philadelphia, whatnot, they're going to discover that somehow they forgot, but they had a trunk load of ballots in their vehicle. And they're going to come up with those things, as many as they need.
How can Florida? You know, Keith, all of the questions, all of the scrutiny in the 2020 results. Remember, when we went to bed on election night, Trump had won the election, and then about 4 a.m., all of these mail-in ballots. Now, why were the mail-in ballots in before then? They started to get counted at 4 in the morning.
Exactly.
And then Joe Biden supposedly wins. But here's the thing. All of that happened in, once again, Nevada and Arizona. The state of Florida is the third.
Too.
Well, and, yeah, that's right.
And in Atlanta.
Well, Pennsylvania wasn't competitive this time, so it didn't matter. But it still matters in Nevada and Arizona.
Well, and Georgia.
Right, that's right. Well, I got a theory on Georgia. I'll get to that in a second. That's a little bit different, but probably the same, sure. The situation is that Florida is the third most populated state in the country behind only New York and California.
They counted it all in one day.
Including the mail-ins, including all of it. In 2 hours, they had 99% reporting. That's mail-in ballots. That's every type of ballot you can put in there. 2 hours, it was a done deal. Nevada is the 32nd most populated state. It takes them 2 weeks. It takes them a week.
Well, they have to try harder because they've got to manufacture.
Now, why have they not gotten the results in? You answered the question in pre-show. Why Nevada and Arizona, you said it's because they're swing states.
Well, here's why they did it, okay? Here's what they do. If you have a large number of blacks in an urban center in your state, that's what the Voting Rights Act was supposed to be targeted at. Basically, they had to deal with the fact that black people don't vote at the same rate or in the same percentages as whites. And if they didn't do anything to load the dice in favor of black voting, then the blacks were just going to get outvoted all the time because that's not their way to get out there and show up on election day between 8 in the morning and 7 in the evening with a picture ID in their hands going to one particular vote. Voting precinct and voting. So what they did was they gave us absentee voting without any cause. They gave us vastly expanded early voting with most of the early voting precincts being in black parts of town and stuff like this. What they did in Pennsylvania, in Atlanta, and in a lot of other blue-oriented states or purple states, what they would do is sometime in the night after the votes had stopped, they would stop counting and they say, who's ahead? Well, if the Republicans were ahead, they would look and say, how many votes do we need to win? They would look at how many votes they need to win. Then they would look in the black precincts and they would see who hadn't voted. They said, well, guess what? They just voted. And, well, what a surprise, they voted for the Democrats.
All right, so... Yes, I agree that there's probably fraud to the extent, we'll never know the extent of it, if at all, because there's never going to be a true investigation to it. But let's talk about Georgia for a second. So here we have Nevada, early votes come in, the month long of early voting, Nevada, Arizona, Democrats are leading, in-person voting on the day of election day, the Republicans take the lead, and the mail-in ballots come back and push
but
the Democrats
they'll never
to the
vote
top.
For that in Pennsylvania because the Democrats love the way things are. They like it just fine. Same thing for Delaware, Maryland, all these
got to talk about Georgia.
Also Nevada.
Here's the thing about Georgia. Kemp, who is a terrible Republican, he's a cuck, he's a joke, he's anti-white. Kemp still beat Abrams, who is worse, handily. Stone Mountain is safe, everybody. Stacey Abrams lost again to a particularly poor Republican candidate, but he beat her this time quite handily. Now, why didn't that trickle down? J.D. Vance, similarly, took his seat in the Senate in Ohio. So why didn't that trickle down to Herschel Walker? I have a theory on that. I think that Herschel Walker and Dr. Oz didn't seal the deal because they're non-white. And again, you have a case of Republicans.
Plus, they're very weak candidates.
They're weak candidates, but Republicans refusing to hunt where the ducks are, Republicans wanting to run on the I am not racist platform. And I think there was just enough. I mean, there was just a couple hundred thousand votes that Kemp got that Walker didn't get that would have put him over the top. And I think there was probably, out of the millions of votes cast in Georgia, probably a couple hundred thousand whites who said, you know what, I'm not going to vote for this joke.
Well, look, that's part of it. But the other part was Kemp learned from his narrow escape last election with Stacey Abrams, and he put into effect some safeguards and some firewalls to prevent that happening that he took advantage of for himself that he didn't share with the Republican Party generally. Now, he's going to share them with him. But basically, our friend Herschel Walker is just a lost ball in high weeds. He's there sitting around waiting for white people to get him into office, white Republicans.
They said it was time for him to compete in a runoff. He put his cleats on.
Yeah, that's right. He said, put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. But see, that's
and what, I would still rather him win than Warnock. I know I'm going to get zero out of Warnock. Walker may do what he's told on a couple of things. I would rather him win than lose, but it's just a joke.
I think he's going to do what he's told on almost everything. But on the other hand, the people telling him are going to be normie con Republicans who are not friends of ours.
Well, we know Warnock is going to give us zero.
Yeah, well, see, that's it. We've got to prevent the left from making irreparable changes, and we can do that, I guess, unless they get a veto-proof majority, which would be 60 in the Senate. On the other hand, what may really save us is Joe Manchin and possibly even Kristen Sinema switching parties from the Democrats to the Republicans. Manchin is already madder than a wet hen because Biden specifically said, you people in cold country, go kill yourselves, you know, because we're going to take your jobs, we're going to take your industry away, and you're going to be sitting there holding the bag, you know, all dressed up with no place to go.
He can call himself a Democrat as long as he continues to do what he's done, which is, and he has single-handedly stopped them from running roughshod.
Well, look, people like Robert Reich are already calling for his head and Sinema's head on a pike in the Democratic Party. He's got no future in the Democratic Party. They will go after him. They'll primary him and get him out. He would be so much better off if he wants to have a continuing political future in transferring himself to the Republican Party. But again, these are just minor stopgaps. The left thinks that they're on a roll, and that's the big problem.
All right, we got one more segment, and then we're going to turn it over to our panel of all-stars coming up in the second and third hours, respectively. Lauren Witzke, former Republican nominee for United States Senate in her own right. Doctors Greg Johnson and Kevin McDonald. Also, Ethan Ralph of the Killstreak making his debut. It's all post-election talk tonight.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C., and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
All right, I want to quickly recap some of the points we've made so far this hour, and then we'll put this hour to bed and get to the featured guests of the evening. Again, 50-50 divided country. Neither side is going to be persuaded or compelled by the other. We have to have a divorce. It's the economy, stupid. It doesn't hold true when so many have no intention of working and are supported by the system. They're immune to recession. I think that's another reason why there wasn't a bigger anti-Biden surge. And this whole thing that would lead you to believe if in a country would revolt against the Democrats because of the rampant inflation, because of their advocacy for child genital mutilation, the crime wave we're experiencing, increased lawlessness on the border, critical race theory, war with Russia. Yeah, that would compel a country to vote against the party in power, except for we are not a country. We are at least two different countries. And everything that I just mentioned, that's who the Democrats are. That's what they want. That's why it didn't hurt them more. That's exactly who they are.
They have no problem with being a minority and ruling autocratically and tyrannically over the majority in the nation. That's what's happened in America since before the Civil War until now.
Now, I want to, this whole situation that's brewing between potentially, or the media is certainly hyping it up, and Trump's played into it a little bit, Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump. Ron DeSantis is a conventional Republican. I mean, it was very remarkable what he did in Florida, and I have a generally favorable opinion of him, the way he handled COVID, the way he handled the hurricane, mentions anti-white, does some things we like, good on immigration. Ron DeSantis running and winning the Republican nomination would be the best thing for the Republican Party, but hear me out. Trump running again would raise the political stress level and create additional instability in this country. And of the two options, I prefer the latter. I prefer Donald Trump running again because I don't think we can vote our way out of this. And I want the whole thing to fall apart. I do vote. I did go vote. And I'll tell you about that in a second. I did go vote. But I don't have any illusions that we're going to vote ourselves out of this. And my interest is not what's in the best interest of the Republican Party. It's what's in the best interest of my people. And I think Trump is an accelerant, the likes of which DeSantis wouldn't. DeSantis would take us back into, for whatever strengths may be, more status quo par for the course Republican versus Democrat politics. We have got to get out of that.
I think that DeSantis would be a little bit better than that. The thing that he does better than Trump is he knows how to use the government apparatus to translate instincts into governmental policy. That's why, for example, they weren't able to steal the election in Florida, but they could do it in Nevada.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. On the other hand, you're right. If your goal is secession,
he doesn't get under the skin of the left and make them irate and out of control.
Having Trump in there would really get them crazy. But the problem with Trump is he makes such poor decisions. He's the guy that appointed Mark Milley as in charge of the Department of Defense, Lloyd Austin, people like that. He put in Rod Rosenstein and Christopher Wray in charge of the FBI. He got rid of Jeff Sessions and put in, you know, the people that he has appointed have turned out 8 out of 10, 4 out of 5, to be bad people. People that turned out stabbing in the back. That's one of the big reasons he didn't accomplish much. That's the big reason why candidate Trump was so much preferable to President Trump. Now, with DeSantis, he wouldn't make those mistakes, but, you know, on the other hand, he would do some log rolling, and, you know, the left may be beyond log rolling at this point. They have tasted the finish line. They're like, you know, they just don't want that. They're like the crocodile in Peter Pan. They got a taste of Captain Hook, and it was so good they spent the rest of their life chasing Captain Hook around the globe. Well, the left now says we can get the woke agenda made into law, and they can't do anything to stop us because they haven't figured out. They don't have the courage because of the race issue that's incumbent in it or baked into the cake of election fraud and the vote through the Voting Rights Act of 65. They won't do anything about it. They would basically, a Republican, a normicon Republican, would rather be accused of pedophilia and even prosecuted and convicted of it than to be called a racist.
Well, that some of that is, look, there are still some very positive trends that we've been talking about for the last 2 years within the Republican base, and that has produced sitting members of the House of Representatives like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gozer and, to a lesser extent, Lauren Boebert, who won by like 60 votes or something. They're going to do a recount there. But with regards to voting, I'll tell you what I did. I like most of you, I vote on Election Day. I wouldn't dream of going in and early voting or casting one of these ridiculous mail-in ballots or anything like that. I did go vote. I took my kids with me to vote. I wanted them to be part of the experience and to see it, and I've done that for the last couple of years, and they get to wait in line and all of that. And Tennessee, I wanted the Democrats to lose more than I thought that establishment Republicanism should have won. And I had the luxury in Tennessee, with Tennessee being such a blood red state, it wasn't competitive. And so I voted for independent candidates up and down. I didn't vote actually for a single Republican or Democrat in partisan races. I voted for Rick Tyler, who's, you know, been a guest on this program, and I voted for Rick Tyler for governor, and then there was another gentleman who was running for Congress who was an independent that I have known and have met before, and I voted for him and that, and so that's what I did. Now, had it been competitive, had it been one of these states where it swings by a point or two, I probably would have voted for the Republican, but I'm just telling you what I did. I did want the Democrats to get wiped out.
It was not that important of... It was not that important an election in Tennessee, but Tennessee is a cautionary tale for one thing. One thing that DeSantis did was used redistricting very wisely to take away all, as many as possible, of the Democratic seats.
We're talking about Bill Lee?
Yeah, well, what Bill Lee didn't... Well, it wasn't just Bill Lee. It was the entire Republican legislature. They redistricted one Democrat, Jim Cooper, a white Gentile, who was in Nashville, basically around Vanderbilt University and whatnot. They got him out, but they could have done the same thing to Steve Cohen in Memphis, but they didn't do it again. Why? Because Republicans are cowards when it comes to black people. They are said, oh, my goodness, they'll call us a racist. Oh, no, no. You know, like Mr. Bill on the, you know, the cartoons they had. You know, they just cannot stand it. And basically, we need every vote we can get. We don't need to be conceding one of our nine congressional seats in Tennessee to a, not just a Democrat, but, I mean, the most woke Democrats you can imagine. We're not talking about Harold Ford anymore. We're talking about Harold Ford on steroids to the third power with Steve Cohen.
Well, and again, I wanted the Democrats to get wiped out. I don't have a lot of affection for establishment Republicans. Had the Tennessee been more competitive, or if we had a Republican worth voting for, you know, Billy, the Tennessee General Assembly, the Tennessee State House of Representatives is decent as far as Republican elected bodies are concerned. Then I probably would have voted that way. But if anything, we're going to be more polarized now than we even were last week, which I think is a blessing for those of us who want to see a collapse of the existing system. And of course, I had a much greater desire to see the Democrats lose than the Republicans win. But I wanted to see wailing and gnashing of teeth. I did go to bed Tuesday night a little bit melancholy because if there was one night in my life, politically speaking, where I just really felt as though we got to win, it wasn't so much because Trump won. It was to see the despair as they realized that Hillary, who was a shoe-in in their minds, was not going to win. And I wanted to see that again, and that's the only reason. But Greg Johnson's going to talk about it. In some ways, we're better off by not winning or by winning the House narrowly. We'll talk about that in the next hour.
Well, the thing is, we have got to let the Democrats suffer the stress rather than us. That's why I wish we had won some more. But on the other hand, we've got to worry about people on our side despairing. I don't want any more Dylan Roofs out there because that's what accelerated the woke agenda. The woke agenda basically was lying dormant until that incident happened, and then all of a sudden everything went.
It was all ready to go. It was on the shelf and packaged and ready to be distributed. They were waiting for a guy like
that. It was on the drawing board, and they said, the next big event like this, you know, we're swinging the whole plan out. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was. That's what they did in World War II. They had the civil rights movement already on the drawing board. They were just waiting for the opportunity to do it.
You know the single worst take I've heard all week? The single worst take I heard on Fox News. I don't know if it was Brett Baier or Brit Hume or whoever it was.
Or Brer Fox.
But they were talking about, I stayed up to 2 o'clock on Tuesday night, early Wednesday morning, you know, watching the results. And then once the vote counters went to bed to manufacture some more votes in states like Arizona and Nevada, I knew we weren't going to get resolution that night.
All the black ministers, go check the trunk of your car. You might find a whole bunch of ballots there.
And then it was going to be another week before we figured out who won. And here we are sitting here on Saturday night. We still don't know, almost a week later. Anyway, but the take was, it was so divided, you know, it wasn't a red wave, wasn't a blue wave. It was shaping up as it's beginning to shape out. And the take on Fox was, you know what this tells us? that Americans really want Republicans and Democrats to work together. That's why they didn't give either side a resounding victory, because they want us to all come together as one America. There is what kind of talk about reading the room poorly. That is not what they want. They want they're at each other's throats.
More cowbell, more cucking is what we want.
They are at each other's throats, the likes of which hasn't been seen since the war between the states. Work together, work things out.
See, people like these typical normie cons, Mark Levin, Todd Starnes, whatever.
Todd Starnes is pretty good.
Yeah, Ben Ferguson.
Ben Ferguson's so good. Todd Starnes is so good.
We got to do, folks, we got to go out there and vote, 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 vote. And then it comes in, you can only vote once, okay, guys? That's all you can do if you're going to be honest. And then it doesn't work. And what do they say? They say, oh, shucks, it didn't work again. You know, what was it that Einstein said? He said that the best definition he knew of insanity was doing the same thing over and over again.
That's why we have to
expecting different results.
We have to get away from thinking that we're going to vote ourselves out of this, and that our path to resolution is electing more Republicans. It is not. At the same time, we didn't want the Democrats to have control of the House and the Senate.
Taking up arms
and the White
but
House.
It's driving the Democrats and the left crazy.
All right, that's our take on it. Let's get the takes of Lauren Witzke, Greg Johnson, Kevin McDonald, and Ethan Ralph. They're coming up next.